who uses these tables? Wounded veterans, the elderly, anyone with incontinence. Maybe it's a disabled parent who has a typically developing child. Well, now you've given them an adjustable table and space to take care of their child. So it really opens doors for so many people.
Hi, brave friends. Welcome to today's practical episode, episode 176. And our guest today is Jamie Betts. She founded the Changing Spaces Advocacy Campaign in Massachusetts after experiencing, along with her daughter Sophia, the challenges that traditional public restrooms present for disabled individuals who require assistance with their daily care. With rare exceptions, the only options that caretakers have for changing their loved ones' undergarments is on the dirty floor of a public restroom. When the facilities offered do not even allow for this, many caretakers resort to setting up a changing station in the car, exposed to the elements and with no privacy. As the individual ages and the situation becomes ever more challenging and unsafe, difficult decisions are made to stay home and begin a spiral toward social isolation. Universal changing tables are the solution. They are powered, height-adjustable tables that are large enough to support an adult weighing up to 300 pounds. Changing Spaces in Massachusetts was organized just last year, but there was already work being done by a handful of individuals around the state. You'll hear all about it in my conversation with Jamie. Thanks so much for listening. This is a really, really important episode. Please make sure that you share. Hi, Jamie. Welcome to the show. I'm so glad you could be on Brave Together podcast today.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
So, Jamie, tell me a little bit about you. Tell me a little bit about your family story.
So, I have a 5-year-old with Sotos syndrome, which is a rare genetic disorder which has, along with cognitive delays and physical delays, an overgrowth aspect to it. So, although she's 5, she is wearing 10-year-old clothes. And because of the autism and developmental delays, she is still in diapers. So, that is what propelled me into this advocacy for universal changing tables, which, you know, maybe if she didn't have the overgrowth component, we could still be accessing normal changing tables. But I realized pretty quickly that that was not going to be an option for her. And then you had Christina, our Pennsylvania National Changing Spaces leader, on your podcast a few years ago. She is actually how I found this campaign. She had been posting about changing tables, and I used one in an airport in Charlotte. It was the first time I'd seen one, and using it, having access to it, and seeing how much it made a difference in our travel experience, I immediately knew that I needed to do this. And we happened to not have a Massachusetts chapter yet. So I was able to fill that role. And it was about a year ago, 13 months ago now, that I got started.
Wow, fantastic. Fantastic. So, like you said, it's been a few years since Christina was on the podcast and really opened my eyes and our audience's eyes to the need and the lack. And so tell me, what has happened in the last few years? What are some triumphs?
So first, I don't know if I actually said what a universal changing table is. So, you know, anytime you go into a bathroom, there's a baby changing table, and that usually holds a maximum of about 50 pounds, and it's maybe two or three feet long. So a universal changing table is able to be used by anyone, babies or adults weighing up to 400 pounds. Ideally, they are height adjustable so that you can raise and lower the table. That allows you to help an adult transfer onto the table, saves the caregiver from huge stress on our bodies of helping to navigate that transfer. And then they have, you know, a few other specifications, you know, a strap to hold you in like in a normal table and a certain amount of space around the room to navigate a wheelchair, things like that. Okay. So since when Christina was on, I believe they still only had a handful of national chapters. And then over the past year, we've got like 15 to 20 more. So over half of states now have a chapter. And it really helps to split it up by state because, you know, we have national campaigns that we're working on. You know, nationally, we are looking at talking to sports leagues instead of, you know, along with going to our individual arenas. And then obviously nationally, you had Kevin on last week and he spoke about trying to, you know, actually change ADA. So that's something that we have a national committee working on. But then on the statewide level, we have advocates who are working with our departments on intellectual disabilities, working to pass legislation, working to change building codes, and also just serving as, you know, I'm here to answer any questions that anyone in Massachusetts might have, or help them advocate for a table in their small community. So I live in Weston. I petitioned our town pool for a changing table. I had access to the advocacy toolkit on our website, which gives a ton of information to provide places like your town pool, your library, and they ended up putting one in. And so we're seeing more and more as people know that they can ask for this, know that they exist, and then have access to these resources to get the accommodations that they deserve in their own community. We are seeing more and more tables. Don't have numbers on how many we have now. In Massachusetts, we have a map with all the changing tables that we know about. Massachusetts still has a lot of empty spaces, but we have a lot actually in the works. So I've been speaking with a couple of the large arenas and they've have committed, at least me, to putting a couple in. Talks with Logan. So hopefully they have one soon. And it's hard to be like, every table is great. Every table makes someone's life, you know, easier and better, but it's a long game, definitely. And like Christina and the other national leaders who have been at this for a long time and are finally starting to see a lot more of the change, I commend them for their patience.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So for anyone who's listening and you're not really, you don't have a child or a teen or adult who's a wheelchair user and in diapers, or even another child that has another disability that leaves them in diapers and in need of changing tables, just imagine that in order for you to be able to go out in the public and your kid needs to be changed, you're bringing a blanket or a beach towel to a public bathroom and laying your child, teen or adult child, or having them stand up, and you're navigating as best as possible. I mean, it's so unsanitary. There's no dignity there with having to put your child on the floor or change a child in the back of a van or the back of a car. It's not private. It's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable for everyone. And so imagine if that was your only option, how much you might just stay at home instead of accessing everything that there is to access out in the community, which is what you want for yourself, which is what you want for your child, what you want for your family. So this advocacy is so, so critical because, as Christina said, I'm quoting her in the first interview, we're all one accident away from needing a universal or adult-sized changing table. Or, you know, we have aging parents. And what if those aging parents end up in diapers and you're trapped at home with them, or they're trapped at home or trapped wherever they live because it's just too hard to go out because there is no way to take care of them in a dignified and safe manner.
Yep. There's so many components of and things to add to what you just said. First of all, yeah, who uses these tables? The coalition in Massachusetts and across the country really that we're trying to build includes wounded veterans, the elderly, anyone with incontinence. You might be a wheelchair user, you might not, but also think about maybe it's a parent in a wheelchair. So a disabled parent who has a typically developing child, well, now you've given them an adjustable table and space to take care of their child. So it really opens doors for so many people. People think that the percentage, maybe the population that this would impact is small because it's not something we talk about. We don't talk about adults or larger kids in diapers. We aren't comfortable talking about it. And also, you know, as Sophia's caregiver, as I started to take on this advocacy, it was hard at first because it feels, you know, it felt like an invasion of her privacy to be talking about this. But if we don't, then people will just stay in the dark. And I don't ever fault anyone for not knowing that these are required and exist because I had no idea. So when I tell people and they didn't know, okay, but then how do you like go back to not knowing? Like once you do know that what is The status quo is I take my daughter out, another caregiver takes out their adult son, and our only option is to search, first of all, the time spent searching for somewhere to change. And then when you go into a restroom, you expect there to be doors on the stalls, right? Yet we go into a restroom and we hope that there is somewhere to change Sophia behind any door, but probably it's a stall where anyone can look under and see, you know, if my husband brings her in a men's room, you know, there she is. And so that's already becoming not an option. Our Wisconsin advocate, you know, she's had trouble getting any legislation passed, but now they're going to pass legislation about public nudity. So she's terrified about, like, she's just waiting for the day she has the police called on her because there's nowhere for her to go. And so she uses her car. And it's really terrible. And when you think about the perceptions we all have about restrooms, right? And COVID has particularly, you know, highlighted all of this. And I say that because that was the time I was going through it to start. Don't touch anything. And you bring your younger kid into the bath, my other typical child into the bathroom. It's like, don't touch anything. Don't look under the stalls. Everyone gets privacy and everything in here is gross. And then you bring in Sophia and you have no privacy and you're, you know, hopefully I'm prepared and have what I need to change you. But I'm often just like ripping off paper towels and putting them on the floor. But there's her face like on the bathroom. And it's absolutely gut-wrenching to do. And like, I don't even like, it's terrible for the caregiver also to be like crawling around on the bathroom floor, but I don't even think about that. It's just like the message you send to both the person being changed and to everyone else who observes it is this person isn't worthy of whatever else that we could provide them that would offer safety and dignity. Like you said, we know that changing tables are out there and we could put them in, but $5,000 is a lot of money. So we're not going to do that. And it's quite a message, again, because COVID was such a jarring event and so highlighted health and germs and all that so much that it's just even more appalling after going through that period to have people know that this problem exists and not try to fix it. We have a bill in Massachusetts that it just passed through its original committee, but it was written to require universal changing tables in new construction and significant remodels for public buildings. So maybe arenas, things like that. The business community didn't like it, obviously. And so they changed the bill to just be in government buildings and they took out the adjustable height, which is the whole point, really. I mean, without it being adjustable height, it is completely useless to half the people who need it. You know, I can still use it for Sophia, but she weighs 65 pounds. That is more than half, like, that is a lot. And, you know, we have, again, a lot of our moms who've been doing this for a long time, other state advocates, they are to the point now where they're like, really, I need a hoist, but we know we can't ask for that. Like, that's never happening. Not never, but
certainly not
happening now.
Wow. And I remember when I interviewed Christina, at the time, I think there was only 11 airports across the country that had adult-sized changing tables. And I'm sure there's more since then. But I remember what was shocking is that there were over 300 doggy relief areas, pet relief areas in airports across the country. And I mean, I'm absolutely wackadoodle about my dogs, but I'm sorry, my child comes first. Humans come first. And it's not even just like, as she described, like this little, I don't know, 5x5 patch of fake grass. Like it's this beautiful area with art and very well done, very nicely done, fancy relief area for dogs in airports. And yet we don't have adult size changing tables. I mean, it's
that inequity and inequality that makes it so much more offensive when you do see the lengths that spaces will go to, places like an airport. That's a law. Like they need to have, you need to have pet relief areas. So just make it a law. Things can get done when they want them to get done. And it's not a matter of space, because that space that could have been used for a truly handicap accessible restroom instead was converted into a large patch of grass inside, like you said. And there's one, I think it's the Delta terminal at LaGuardia. Every time I fly, it's just so infuriating because it's literally right next to the tiny handicap restroom and it's so offensive. So yeah. And again, there are pets that are service animals. And so like that argument can be made. I'm absolutely not saying we shouldn't have a pet relief area. Does it need to be so glorious? Probably not. And why them and not us? Why dogs and not
right.
people?
Yes, right. Why dogs and not people? I agree. Hi, friends. I just want to take a quick second to share big, big news. We have a matching donor. One of our supporters has pledged to give up to $15,000 in matching funds for all new donors or new sponsors for our annual 5K fundraiser. A sponsor can be an individual, a family, or a business. Check the link in the show notes if you want to be a sponsor or a donor for our annual 5K fundraiser. The 5K is not until October, but we are recruiting sponsors now. Is there anything that you haven't said or I haven't said that you just wish the general population really understood about this need?
Yes, I think it's easy to conceptually say, oh yeah, that would be a nice to have for people. Totally. And it's so much more than a nice to have because it's not just the act itself is so undignified and strips the person being cared for of their humanity. And even when you were talking, you said your child, your child, your child. Adults, it's so much worse even because you're so much more aware of what is happening and that this is all that is being offered to you. But with Sophia, it is so much work to take her out and like chase normal, right? And I know that every time we take her out, it is beneficial to her development. So obviously, I work as hard as I can to keep bringing her out and putting her out there. We've been skiing a lot this summer. Okay, or this summer. We've been skiing a lot this winter. And she, I've never seen her happier. The past month, we've gone skiing every weekend. She has literally never been happier. Her language has exploded. Her sister and her are getting along so much better because it's this thing. This is the first time they've had a thing that they do together. But oh my gosh, changing her in a ski, wherever you are. You know, we skied at Sunapee and they have the adaptive program and they actually have a table there. So a couple of the weekends we were there and that was great. But everywhere else, it's like, okay, so you're taking off all your ski stuff. Everything's gross and wet and it was a nightmare. And it would be so easy to think about it and say, there's no way we'd be able to do that. And she wouldn't get to have that experience. And that's just because of a lack of a changing table. And it's such a simple thing. So it's not, I guess that, so sorry, long-winded way of saying, it's not just, oh, a changing table would be nice because it would make it easier to change her. A changing table would be nice because it would give us the ability to go. And I go, but I've got, you know, my husband or a nanny with the other kid a lot, and I'm married, so I have a partner helping me. If you don't have that, you're just at such a disadvantage for offering your child access to this development. And that's what makes me very sad. And then as you get older, just you hear, like Kevin was talking last week about, he was just like, not drink water. I mean, just doesn't drink water for 2 days before he flies or whatever, because, or hopefully not 2 days.
Right. No, not 2 days, but yeah, to fast.
To have to make that decision.
Food, yeah. Right. Because there is no place for him to use a restroom on an airplane. Mm-hmm. It's shocking what people have to do in order to leave their house, right? It's not just having a place to change your child, your teen, your dad, your spouse, whoever it is that needs to be changed out in public. It's access to the community. It's access to a museum. It's access to the park. It's access to school. It's access to fun outings, you know, sporting events, sports, adaptive sports. Or you stay at home. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's so isolating. And you've heard me say this already, you know, Parents and families within the disability community are already fighting loneliness and isolation. And here is one more layer.
I've said to multiple people in the past week, our ski weekends are over. And I've been reflecting on it. And just my husband and I just keep saying how wonderful it's been to see Sophia so happy and part of this thing that I never thought she would be able to do. And because of adaptive skiing and because we work really hard, she can do it. And also for our mental health and to have this, our family be able to do this fun thing together and have Sophia not be left behind. But we shouldn't be the exception. Like, you shouldn't have to work so hard for that.
Right. And, you know, I think one day as these campaigns grow and you get success after success, then there should be an app of where are the, you know, changing tables, you know, just so that it's easy to plan your day.
So we have a map on our website. So on changingspaces.com, there is a map and you can search by zip code or by type of venue. So two things. One, use it, check it out. And also, if you know of a space, if you know of a changing table, submit the location so we can make that map as robust as we can for, you know, just like you said, so people can plan around it. And then I was just sent, I think it's the Connected Parent. Someone just...
Yes. Yeah, the connectedparent.com.
I think they also have... You can search on there. Like, they include that in their...
In their resources?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Sorry, my brain.
No, it's okay. Yeah.
Because someone just sent me like three that they added. So I didn't know that there was another tool just yesterday. So I didn't know there was another tool out there that gave you locations. So that's great.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is not perfect at all, but most places do, if there's like a first aid room or anything, I now always will go in and ask to use that. And that's, no one's ever told me no. But just so people know, that is an option for places that don't have one yet.
What are some other options, Jamie? I mean, I know we've mentioned the car. We've mentioned, yeah, travel with a blanket and all the gear. Ugh. But like asking about a first aid room in a particular location or venue, what else would be a tip or trick for parents to know who maybe are early on in their journey and they haven't figured it out?
Yeah. I mean, that's the only trick, really. I mean, you always have the supplies you need. We are talking in Massachusetts. I think Ohio has a lending program. So trying to figure out a way without having to have venues buy a changing table, but have them available for events, right? So maybe there's an event at a space and then they could call us and borrow a table. Two other things, there's mobile resources.
Changing.
Yeah. So
right.
There's Momentum Refresh is one.
I was just going to say, yeah. I've seen that in person. It's really amazing.
Have you seen one in person? I've never seen one.
Yes. Yeah. It's quite nice.
Good.
It's quite nice. Yeah. I hope that company grows and grows and grows. Please, investors, invest in Momentum Refresh. We need those in every state.
Mm-hmm. And then in Massachusetts, I've worked a lot with the ARC of Massachusetts. They've been very helpful to me with the legislation and kind of growing the coalition and meeting the right people. And I can talk to you about what our next step in Massachusetts is. But it's not like the main ARC of Massachusetts, but there's another ARC branch that runs something called the ARC Tank every year. So it's like Shark Tank, but the ARC Tank. And they give out hundreds of thousands of dollars to ideas that will help the disability community. So I talked to the woman at the ARC and couldn't figure out how I could apply for this or how we would do it. So that happened over here. And then I met this woman, Lisa, who through another woman who I've met. And it's so much of this is just like getting to know people in such a small world and you get to know people. And then I'm introduced to you somehow. So this woman, Lisa, is in another town in Lynn. The town is called Lynn in Massachusetts. They had created and had already applied for an ARC Tank award called the Winnebago. And this was a mobile trailer, like rest area almost. So it was a sensory room. And then a large portion of Lynn speaks Spanish. So they had a lot of translations and different like alternative communication on the walls and the sensory space. And then they had just like an area to change. They didn't have a table. So then I met Lisa. She learned about changing tables, and then they added a changing table to the Winnebago.
Fantastic.
And then they won. And so that was a ton of, yeah, so they won, I don't remember how much, but they won enough. They granted the entire project. It's now in production and they're hoping to have it out this summer, and they're going to loan it throughout the state. So that will be hopefully available at, you know, fairs and things like that. And hopefully towns see it and want one of their own.
That is such a great idea.
This resource was so thoughtfully, you know, created by these moms in Lynn, obviously. And,
way to go, moms.
Really. So there are exciting things, you know, even so this bill, like I said, it got kind of gutted, not for sure yet. Like we're still trying to get the next committee to at least put adjustable height back. So that was definitely the intent. There are international building codes that have been put into place as of this year. So as of January 1st, 2024. So it's like the International Building Code Committee. It's an official guidelines. Sorry. So the 2024 International Building Code includes changing tables and the specifications that they would recommend. Now, that doesn't mean anything unless your state or your country decides to adopt them. So, but it gives guidelines, you know, like Kevin was talking last week, and I need to get that information from him on who to talk to. When we petition them to add universal changing tables to ADA, we can say, look, the research has already been done. These are the you don't have to do the work. These are the specifications. We've had input. Different disability advocates, architects have all had input. And this is what they say is the best practice. So that is in place now. And all this is on our website. Anyone who wants any information is on it's on changingspaces.com.
Changingspaces.com. So if anybody is interested in starting a chapter in their state, if they're listening and they want to know, one, if there's a chapter in their state, two, if not, they'd like to start one, they just go to changingspaces.com.
Mm-hmm. And look under chapters. And then you can either connect and ask your current founder leader how you can get involved, or if there is not one, please start one. If you're in Illinois, there is a bill that was just introduced, but we do not have an Illinois leader yet. So definitely reach out if you're there. The other thing I was going to say, Tennessee has done like the best thing. They have their Department on Intellectual Disabilities, which every state has, runs a grant program. So the state legislature put $1 million line item in for grants to businesses to install tables. And I think they started out as a $5,000 grant, and then they increased it this year, I think, to 10. And that gets tables actually in buildings now, right? So this bill that we have, even if they'd passed it exactly as we wanted it, it wouldn't put a table into a tilting in until at least 2026, whereas in Tennessee, they're putting tables in now. So we have a sponsor here in Massachusetts who is willing to put that in, or, you know, request that for the next session. So it would be next year. No, it should be this year. So it should be requested this year in 2024. And then I don't know what the timeline is for when people would be able to start requesting. But so that I'm hoping that we can get that through. We're taking our little win on the, not a little, it's a big win. It's a big win on the government buildings. But, you know, the state house doesn't have one. When we all went to testify for this bill, there were 10 of us, and we couldn't bring the people we were advocating for because we were there for 5 hours before it was our turn to testify. And there's no space. So the advocacy at the legislative level is such a big ask. It's such a big ask. I mean, you have parents who, you know, I work full time, but there's that. And then if you're caregiving full time, you have to find childcare, and they don't tell you when you're going to. It's really hard. They don't make it easy.
What helps you keep going, Jamie, when this is a long this is a marathon to get to where you want to get. So what keeps you going?
It hasn't felt like an option for me to keep going or not since I used the first table that we used. It really hasn't. And I've said to people like, well, Sophia could be potty trained. And I'm like, I would not stop. I've seen what a difference it makes for family, like for entire families. And I'm so devastated that this is where we are, that this is still how we're treating people, because it's a choice.
I agree. I agree. Well, Jamie, thank you so much for the work that you're doing. Thank you for coming on the show to tell us all about this. It's really, 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 really critical. And I wish I could get involved. This really, really touched me years ago when I was talking to Christina. I really wanted to start an advocacy team as part of We Are Brave, but my board knows, you know, how stretched I am. So it wasn't going to be me leading it. I needed to find others. And I didn't have the volunteers to get it going. So maybe that has changed. That would be great because the need is there. We are all one accident away. All of us across the world are one accident away from somebody we know or love or care about needing an adult size changing table.
Well, thank you for continuing to use your platform. It would be wonderful if you put a committee together, and I would absolutely be happy to help however I can. But just you having us on and posting and the awareness spreading is so important. So we very much appreciate your partnership.
You're so welcome. You're so welcome. Thanks so much for listening today. Do us a favor and leave us a review and a rating so that this podcast can get into the ears and the hearts of more and more moms. Did you know that Brave Together podcast is an extension of our nonprofit organization called We Are Brave Together? We Are Brave Together serves an international community of caregiving moms by offering support groups that are virtual and in person, educational resources, and low-cost weekend retreats. To join us today, go to wearebravetogether.org. Our support and sisterhood await you. Brave Together podcast is for entertainment and education purposes only and is not a substitute and should not be relied on for medical or mental health advice. The use of any content on our podcast, linked in our show notes, or on our website is to be done at your own personal risk. Please seek out a professional to assess your own medical or mental health concerns, because we are all beautifully complex and the content of this podcast is for a broad audience.